Day 357, Saturday, February 3rd, 2 Chronicles 3 and 1 Kings 6 and 7. 2 Chronicles 3 1-17 NKJV. Now Solomon began to build the house of the Lord at Jerusalem on Mount Moriah, where the Lord had appeared to his father David, at the place that David had prepared on the threshing floor of Ornan the Jebusite. And he began to build on the second day of the second month in the fourth year of his reign. This is the foundation which Solomon laid for building the house of God. The length was 60 cubits, by cubits according to the former measure, and the width 20 cubits. And the vestibule that was in front of the sanctuary was 20 cubits long across the width of the house, and the height was 120. He overlaid the inside with pure gold. The larger room he paneled with cypress, which he overlaid with fine gold, and he carved palm trees and chainwork on it. And he decorated the house with precious stones for beauty, and the gold was gold from Parvaim. He also overlaid the house, the beams and doorposts, its walls and doors, with gold, and he carved cherubim on the walls, and he made the most holy place. Its length was according to the width of the house, 20 cubits, and its width 20 cubits. He overlaid it with 600 talents of fine gold. The weight of the nails was 50 shekels of gold, and he overlaid the upper area with gold. In the most holy place he made two cherubim, fashioned by carving, and overlaid them with gold. The wings of the cherubim were 20 cubits in overall length. One wing of the one cherub was 5 cubits, touching the wall of the room, and the other wing was 5 cubits, touching the wing of the other cherub. One wing of the other cherub was 5 cubits, touching the wall of the room, and the other wing also was 5 cubits, touching the wing of the other cherub. The wings of these cherubim spanned 20 cubits overall. They stood on their feet, and they faced inward. And he made the veil of blue, purple, crimson, and fine linen, and wove cherubim into it. Also he made in front of the temple two pillars 35 cubits high, and the capital that was on the top of each of them was 5 cubits. He made wreaths of chainwork, as in the inner sanctuary, and put them on top of the pillars, and he made 100 pomegranates, and put them on the wreaths of chainwork. Then he set up the pillars before the temple, one on the right hand and the other on the left. He called the name of the one on the right hand Jachin, and the name of the one on the left Boaz. 1 Kings 6 1-38 NKJV. And it came to pass in the 480th year after the children of Israel had come out of the land of Egypt, in the fourth year of Solomon's reign over Israel, in the month of Ziv, which is the second month, that he began to build the house of the Lord. Now the house which King Solomon built for the Lord, its length was 60 cubits, its width 20, and its height 30 cubits. The vestibule in front of the sanctuary of the house was 20 cubits long across the width of the house, and the width of the vestibule extended 10 cubits from the front of the house. And he made for the house windows with beveled frames. Against the wall of the temple he built chambers all around, against the walls of the temple, all around the sanctuary and the inner sanctuary. Thus he made side chambers all around it. The lowest chamber was 5 cubits wide, the middle was 6 cubits wide, and the third was 7 cubits wide. For he made narrow ledges around the outside of the temple, so that the support beams would not be fastened into the walls of the temple. And the temple, when it was built with stone finished at the quarry, so that no hammer or chisel or any iron tool was heard in the temple while it was being built. The doorway for the middle story was on the right side of the temple. They went up by stairs to the middle story, and from the middle to the third. So he built the temple and finished it, and he paneled the temple with beams and boards of cedar. And he built side chambers against the entire temple, each 5 cubits high. They were attached to the temple with cedar beams. Then the word of the Lord came to Solomon, saying, concerning this temple which you are building, if you walk in my statutes, execute my judgments, keep all my commandments, and walk in them, then I will perform my word with you, which I spoke to your father David. And I will dwell among the children of Israel, and will not forsake my people Israel. So Solomon built the temple and finished it. And he built the inside walls of the temple with cedar boards. From the floor of the temple to the ceiling he paneled the inside with wood. And he covered the floor of the temple with planks of cypress. Then he built the 20-cubit room at the rear of the temple, from floor to ceiling, with cedar boards. He built it inside as the inner sanctuary, as the most holy place. And in front of it the temple sanctuary was 40 cubits long. The inside of the temple was cedar, carved with ornamental buds and open flowers. All was cedar, there was no stone to be seen. And he prepared the inner sanctuary inside the temple, to set the Ark of the Covenant of the Lord there. The inner sanctuary was 20 cubits long, 20 cubits wide, and 20 cubits high. He overlaid it with pure gold, and overlaid the altar of cedar. So Solomon overlaid the inside of the temple with pure gold. He stretched gold chains across the front of the inner sanctuary, and overlaid it with gold. The whole temple he overlaid with gold, until he had finished all the temple. Also he overlaid with gold the entire altar that was by the inner sanctuary. Inside the inner sanctuary he made two cherubim of olive wood, each 10 cubits high. One wing of the cherub was 5 cubits, and the other wing of the cherub 5 cubits, 10 cubits from the tip of one wing to the tip of the other. And the other cherub was 10 cubits. Both cherubim were of the same size and shape. The height of one cherub was 10 cubits, and so was the other cherub. Then he set the cherubim inside the inner room, and they stretched out the wings of the cherubim so that the wing of the one touched one wall, and the wing of the other cherub touched the other wall, and their wings touched each other in the middle of the room. Also he overlaid the cherubim with gold. Then he carved all the walls of the temple all around, both the inner and outer sanctuaries, with carved figures of cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers. And the floor of the temple he overlaid with gold, both the inner and outer sanctuaries. For the entrance of the inner sanctuary he made doors of olive wood. The lintel and doorposts were 1/5 of the wall. The two doors were of olive wood, and he carved on them figures of cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers, and overlaid them with gold. And he spread gold on the cherubim and on the palm trees. So for the door of the sanctuary he also made doorposts of olive wood, 1/4 of the wall. And the two doors were of cypress wood. Two panels comprised one folding door, and two panels comprised the other folding door. Then he carved cherubim, palm trees, and open flowers on them, and overlaid them with gold applied evenly on the carved work. And he built the inner court with 3 rows of hewn stone and a row of cedar beams. In the 4th year the foundation of the house of the Lord was laid, in the month of Ziv. And in the 11th year, in the month of Bul, which is the 8th month, the house was finished in all its details and according to all its plans. So he was 7 years in building it. 1 Kings 7:1-51 NKJV. But Solomon took 13 years to build his own house, so he finished all his house. He also built the house of the forest of Lebanon. Its length was 100 cubits, its width 50 cubits, and its height 30 cubits, with 4 rows of cedar pillars, and cedar beams on the pillars. And it was paneled with cedar above the beams that were on 45 pillars, 15 to a row. There were windows with beveled frames in 3 rows, and window was opposite window in 3 tiers. And all the doorways and doorposts had rectangular frames, and window was opposite window in 3 tiers. He also made the hall of pillars. Its length was 50 cubits, and its width 30 cubits. And in front of them was a portico with pillars, and a canopy was in front of them. Then he made a hall for the throne, the hall of judgment, where he might judge, and it was paneled with cedar from floor to ceiling. And the house where he dwelt had another court inside the hall, of like workmanship. Solomon also made a house like this hall for Pharaoh's daughter, whom he had taken as wife. All these were of costly stones cut to size, trimmed with saws, inside and out, from the foundation to the eaves, and also on the outside to the great court. The foundation was of costly stones, large stones, some 10 cubits and some 8 cubits. And above were costly stones, hewn to size, and cedar wood. The great court was enclosed with 3 rows of hewn stones and a row of cedar beams. So were the inner court of the house of the Lord and the vestibule of the temple. Now King Solomon sent and brought Huram from Tyre. He was the son of a widow from the tribe of Naphtali, and his father was a man of Tyre, a bronze worker. He was filled with wisdom and understanding and skill in working with all kinds of bronze work. So he came to King Solomon and did all his work. And he cast 2 pillars of bronze, each one 18 cubits high, and a line of 12 cubits measured the circumference of each. Then he made 2 capitals of cast bronze, to set on the tops of the pillars. The height of 1 capital was 5 cubits, and the height of the other capital was 5 cubits. He made a lattice network, with wreaths of chainwork, for the capitals which were on top of the pillars, 7 chains for 1 capital and 7 for the other capital. So he made the pillars, and 2 rows of pomegranates above the network all around to cover the capitals that were on top. And thus he did for the other capital. The capitals which were on top of the pillars in the hall were in the shape of lilies, 4 cubits. The capitals on the 2 pillars also had pomegranates above, by the convex surface which was next to the network, and there were 200 such pomegranates in rows on each of the capitals all around. Then he set up the pillars by the vestibule of the temple. He set up the pillar on the right and called its name Jachin. And he set up the pillar on the left and called its name Boaz. The tops of the pillars were in the shape of lilies. So the work of the pillars was finished. And he made the sea of cast bronze, 10 cubits from one brim to the other. It was completely round. Its height was 5 cubits, and a line of 30 cubits measured its circumference. Below its brim were ornamental buds encircling it all around, 10 to a cubit, all the way around the sea. The ornamental buds were cast in 2 rows when it was cast. It stood on 12 oxen, 3 looking toward the north, 3 looking toward the west, 3 looking toward the south, and 3 looking toward the east. The sea was set upon them, and all their back parts pointed inward. It was a handbreadth thick, and its brim was shaped like the brim of a cup, like a lily blossom. It contained 2,000 baths. He also made 10 carts of bronze. 4 cubits was the length of each cart, 4 cubits its width, and 3 cubits its height. And this was the design of the carts. They had panels, and the panels were between frames. On the panels that were between the frames were lions, oxen, and cherubim. And on the frames was a pedestal on top. Below the lions and oxen were wreaths of plated work. Every cart had 4 bronze wheels and axles of bronze, and its 4 feet had supports. Under the laver were supports of cast bronze beside each wreath. Its opening inside the crown at the top was 1 cubit in diameter, and the opening was round, shaped like a pedestal, 1.5 cubits in outside diameter, and also on the opening were engravings. But the panels were square, not round. Under the panels were the 4 wheels, and the axles of the wheels were joined to the cart. The height of a wheel was 1.5 cubits. The workmanship of the wheels was like the workmanship of a chariot wheel. Their axle pins, their rims, their spokes, and their hubs were all of cast bronze. And there were 4 supports at the 4 corners of each cart. Its supports were part of the cart itself. On the top of the cart, at the height of 0.5 cubit, it was perfectly round. And on the top of the cart, its flanges and its panels were of the same casting. On the plates of its flanges and on its panels he engraved cherubim, lions, and palm trees, wherever there was a clear space on each, with wreaths all around. Thus he made the 10 carts. All of them were of the same mold, one measure, and one shape. Then he made 10 lavers of bronze. Each laver contained 40 baths, and each laver was 4 cubits. On each of the 10 carts was a laver. And he put 5 carts on the right side of the house, and 5 on the left side of the house. He set the sea on the right side of the house, toward the southeast. Huram made the lavers and the shovels and the bowls. So Huram finished doing all the work that he was to do for King Solomon for the house of the Lord, the 2 pillars, the 2 bowl-shaped capitals that were on top of the 2 pillars, the 2 networks covering the 2 bowl-shaped capitals which were on top of the pillars, 400 pomegranates for the 2 networks, 2 rows of pomegranates for each network, to cover the 2 bowl-shaped capitals that were on top of the pillars, the 10 carts, and 10 lavers on the carts, 1 sea, and 12 oxen under the sea, the pots, the shovels, and the bowls, all these articles which Huram made for King Solomon for the house of the Lord were of burnished bronze. In the plain of Jordan the king had them cast in clay molds, between Succoth and Zeretan. And Solomon did not weigh all the articles, because there were so many, the weight of the bronze was not determined. Thus Solomon had all the furnishings made for the house of the Lord, the altar of gold, and the table of gold on which was the showbread, the lampstands of pure gold, 5 on the right side and 5 on the left in front of the inner sanctuary, with the flowers and the lamps and the wick trimmers of gold, the basins, the trimmers, the bowls, the ladles, and the censers of pure gold, and the hinges of gold, both for the doors of the inner room, the most holy place, and for the doors of the main hall of the temple. So all the work that King Solomon had done for the house of the Lord was finished, and Solomon brought in the things which his father David had dedicated, the silver and the gold and the furnishings. He put them in the treasuries of the house of the Lord. Daily Deep Dive, the UCG reading. The UCG reading program states, the date of the beginning of the building of the temple is given as the 480th year after the children of Israel came out of Egypt, which was also the 4th year of Solomon's reign. Thanks to the painstaking work of Professor Edwin Thiele, who in 1950 worked out a likely chronology for the kingdoms of Israel and Judah, showing the books of Kings to be entirely trustworthy and in harmony with a well-established Assyrian chronology, it can be reasonably ascertained that Rehoboam began his reign in or very close to 931-930 BC. As 1 Kings 11:42 informs us that Solomon reigned 40 years, Solomon's first year, according to this chronology, was 979-69 BC, and his 4th year, in which he began the construction of the temple, was 967-966 BC. Based on these dates, we may conclude that the Exodus occurred in or very close to the year 1447-1446 BC. As regards chronology, this chapter also provides us with a way to determine whether Judah was counting the years of a king's reign using a Nisan to Nisan, spring to spring, or a Tishri to Tishri, autumn to autumn, reckoning on the Hebrew calendar. The work on the temple was begun in the 2nd month of Solomon's 4th year, 1 Kings 6:1, and completed in the 8th month of Solomon's 11th year, having been under construction 7 years, 1 Kings 6:38. Months are always numbered from the spring month of Nisan, first month of the sacred year, regardless of whether one is reckoning a year from Nisan to Nisan, sacred year, or Tishri to Tishri, civil year. Reckoning was also inclusive, meaning the first and last units or fractions of units in a group are included and counted as full units. If Judah had been using a Nisan to Nisan reckoning of regnal years, the temple would have been described as 8 years in building. However, using a Tishri to Tishri reckoning yields the 7 years of 1 Kings 6:38. The temple sanctuary, which contained the holy place and the most holy place, or Holy of Holies, was a rectangular building measuring about 90 feet long by 30 feet wide by 45 feet high. This and subsequent measurements assume an 18-inch cubit, although it is possible that they may have used the longer 20.5-inch royal cubit from Egypt or a larger variant, which would make these measurements bigger. On the eastern side of the sanctuary was an enclosed porch that extended the width of the building, projected about 15 feet from it, and apparently formed a 180-foot tower, compare 2 Chronicles 3-4. Around the sanctuary building, Solomon built a very curious honeycomb of offices or rooms. These rooms were arranged in three stories. The lowest rooms were about 7.5 feet wide. The middle story rooms were about 9 feet wide, and the upper rooms were about 10.5 feet wide. In 1 Kings 6:6, we are told that Solomon built narrow ledges around the outside of the temple, so that the support beams would not be fastened into the walls of the temple. This indicates that the sides of the sanctuary had a stepped appearance during construction, and the upper story offices each projected 1 cubit further toward the sanctuary interior than the office below. No doubt the exterior facade concealed this stepped feature once the building was completed. Within the southern side of the office complex was a winding stairway, either a circular or square spiral, that provided access to the second and third story offices. This honeycomb of offices would seem to bear on Christ's statement, "In my Father's house are many rooms," John 14:2, NIV. He may have been using the temple's architecture as a visual model to his teaching, though, as we will examine when we later come to this verse in our reading, he was also probably using another analogy of his day, that of a groom building onto his father's house to prepare for the addition of his wife to the family. Interestingly, 1 Kings 6 also tells us that every stone was cut and polished and prepared for its position away from the building site, so that no hammer or chisel or any iron tool was heard in the temple while it was being built. Verse 7. Just as the physical temple of God was built of stones finished and fitted for their place before they were brought to the mountain and assembled into a glorious building, so Christians, each a living stone, 1 Peter 2:5, together a spiritual temple, 1 Corinthians 3:16, are being finished and fitted for their place before they will be brought together at the resurrection and assembled in glory. During the construction of the temple, God sent word to Solomon saying, "If you walk in my statutes, execute my judgments, keep all my commandments, and walk in them, then I will perform my word with you, which I spoke to your father David." 1 Kings 6:12. Some mistakenly think that this puts a condition on God's unconditional promise to David in 2 Samuel 7. It does nothing of the sort. God's promise to David, that he would have an eternal dynasty and never lack a man to sit upon his earthly throne, is unconditional. But God did not promise this eternal dynasty would continue through Solomon's line. The unconditional promise was that one of David's descendants would occupy the throne forever. God's promise to Solomon was that if he remained faithful, then his line would occupy that throne forever. But Solomon, as we will see, did not remain faithful. Although Solomon's line still occupies that throne in the person of the British monarch, that throne will be turned over to another of David's descendants, Jesus Christ, who is a descendant of David through Nathan, Luke 3:31, not Solomon. This will occur at Christ's second coming. Solomon's ruling line will then cease. So, the unconditional promise to David will be kept, but Solomon's dynasty will not endure forever because he failed to fulfill the condition. Solomon also built the main administrative centers of Israel's government. The massive house of the Forest of Lebanon probably served as Solomon's armory, measuring about 150 feet long, 75 feet wide and 45 feet tall. It obtained its name from the white fragrant cedar wood with which it was paneled. No. Doubt taken from Lebanon's famous Mount Lebanus, and from its 45 pillars, which must have looked like the trees of a forest. Around the building ran a three-course row of windows, beveled on the inside to maximize the dispersion of daylight. The doors were similarly beveled on the exterior, for aesthetics, and arranged in groups of three, providing quick access to the interior. Before the building was also a colonnade of pillars supporting an exterior roof. Solomon's court was seated in the Hall of Judgment. Here Solomon sat as the Supreme Justice of Israel under God. Under Israel's system of justice, a citizen could appeal directly to the king in matters of law or equity and, if the king agreed to hear the case, the proceedings were held in the Hall of Judgment. Once again, the hall was paneled with Lebanon cedar. Here also was perhaps the main chamber for what some have described as Israel's National Assembly of Elders, a sort of House of Lords or Senate for Israel, which, in the opinion of some modern examiners, assisted the king in the government over which he presided. We'll see further mention of this in a few days. Solomon's personal residence was modeled on the Hall of Judgment, although little information is given about its own features. If Solomon followed the typical pattern of Middle Eastern monarchs, his personal residence was at one extreme of the complex, the House of the Forest of Lebanon and the Hall of Judgment in the center, and the residence of the daughter of Pharaoh was at the opposite extreme, along with the residence of Solomon's harem. In mentioning Solomon's personal residence, Scripture adds that Solomon built a similar residence for his wife, the daughter of Pharaoh. It was not the practice of sovereigns to dwell with their spouses, and thus a second residence was provided for the daughter of Pharaoh. But this note also raises some questions we have not yet looked at. When had Solomon taken the daughter of Pharaoh? Was it before or after his father's death? And why was such a pairing permitted, especially given the prohibitions against marrying a non-Israelite? Exodus 23:31-33, Exodus 34:12-16, Deuteronomy 7:1-4. It would appear that she was his first wife, given her mention here and in 1 Kings 11, even though Solomon's heir, Rehoboam, was not her son but the son of an Ammonite, 1 Kings 14:21. First of all, it should be noted that the prohibitions just cited were against marrying Canaanites, not Egyptians. And in 1 Kings 3, the fact that Solomon married the daughter of Pharaoh, verse 1, was immediately followed by the fact that he at that time generally walked in obedience to God, verse 3, that is, his marriage was not referred as something wrong. Still, we can see in it the seeds of what later became a huge problem. Generally speaking, as mentioned in our earlier highlights on 1 Kings 3 and 2 Chronicles 1, the marriages of Middle Eastern sovereigns often were the seals of political alliances made with foreign potentates. Solomon's marriage to the daughter of Pharaoh was most likely the sealing of an alliance with Egypt. Josephus, the Jewish historian, states that Solomon took the daughter of Pharaoh after David's death. Antiquities of the Jews, Book 8, Chap. 2, Second 1. And it does follow that way in 1 Kings. Did Solomon undertake the alliance with Egypt on the death of David in an effort to forestall a possible war with Israel's powerful southern neighbor, who might seek to take advantage of a new king suspected of lacking the military acumen of his father? It would appear that one of Solomon's strategies for maintaining peace and the stability of his kingdom was to enter into marriage and trading alliances with the major nations and many trading sheikhs of the eastern desert surrounding Israel. Thus Solomon's 700 wives and 300 concubines, 1 Kings 11:3, were not so much wives as tokens of international covenants, most of them probably never being seen more than once by Solomon, though there were a number that he clearly did love. Verse 2. Whatever the reason for Solomon's marriage to the daughter of Pharaoh, it began a trend that obviously got out of hand. Indeed, this multiplying of pagan wives was clearly in disobedience to God, Deuteronomy 17:17, as was marrying women from nations that God had certainly forbidden, see 1 Kings 11:2, and it eventually proved to be the undoing of his kingdom for, as recorded in 1 Kings 11, his foreign wives eventually led him into idolatry. The result was the rebellion of the northern 10 tribes after his death, and the voiding of the conditional covenant God made with him concerning the perpetuity of his seed upon the throne of Israel. Solomon had failed to learn the lesson of Psalm 75:6-7. For exaltation comes neither from the east nor from the west nor from the south. But God is the judge, he puts down one, and exalts another. While alliances with other kingdoms did serve to strengthen Israel for a while, the true exaltation of Israel would not come from these alliances with temporary rulers of this earth but from God, and so would abasement for disobedience. It is never prudent or wise to contravene the commands of God. War, instability and schism, whether personal or national, are the result. And, 2 Chronicles 3 notes, verse 11, using 18 inches for a cubit, each wing would have been 7.5 feet long. All four together, 20 cubits, would have been 30 feet wide. The room was a 20-cubit cubed room, see 1 Kings 6:20. The two wings' width was equal to the cherub's height, 10 cubits or approximately 15 tall, 1 Kings 6:23. Verse 17, Jachin means he will establish. According to the John Gill commentary, Boaz means in him or at his strength. John Gill also includes this statement. Here stands Jachin, to let them know the Lord will establish and settle them semicolon dot dot dot. Here is Boaz to direct them to Christ, in whom their strength lies, the JFB commentary states. These names were symbolical, and indicated the strength and stability, not so much of the material temple, for they were destroyed along with it, Jer 52:17, as of the spiritual kingdom of God, which was embodied in the temple. And, the Adam Clark commentary states, that is, he shall establish the left pillar, Boaz, that is, in strength. These were no doubt emblematical, for notwithstanding their names, they seem to have supported no part of the building. And, the Targum states the name of that on the right hand was Jachin, because the kingdom of the house of David was established, and the name of the left was Boaz, from the name of Boaz the patriarch of the family of Judah, from whom all the kings of the house of Judah have descended. And,